Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. No contracts, no snacks, say Nabisco workers on strike in 5 states. They don't care about frontline workers. They only care about the almighty dollar. We're tired of getting stepped on and treated like trash. We've had enough, says striking Nabisco worker Rusty Lewis.
We're joined now by 3 of the strikers from the Richmond, Virginia plant, Darlene Carpenter, Janelle Lambert-Watkins, and Christine Brown. Members of Local 358 of the Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers, and Grain Millers Union.
We're talking to Nabisco workers on strike in 5 states over pensions and outsourcing. And the first question is, should I throw away my Oreos, throw away my Ritz crackers until you as workers get what you want and need?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes, you should. Absolutely.
Would we carry that through and say that we're actually telling people to boycott the company until such time as they give the workers their just due?
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, you heard it here. No more Ritz, no more Oreos until the workers are compensated as they deserve to be. So with that, why don't we go around and talk about the kind of work that you folks do for Nabisco, how long you've been working there, and what it's been like to work in the plants. Why don't we get started with, how about Christine?
I've been with Nabisco for 20 years. I'm a packing technician on the Ritz line. I package the Ritz. It's been a challenge, especially during last year, during COVID. We worked through the whole pandemic and got no compensation. All we get is a slap in the face with all this outsourcing of our jobs to Mexico. And they want to change our work schedule as if we're not working enough hours as it is. And they talk about it's for a better home-life balance. How can it be? Now you disrupting my life balance with a 12-hour shift, when normally my shift is just 8 hours. So you're not making it better for me. You're making it worse.
Janelle, talk about the work that you do.
I'm a mixing technician, and I mix the ingredients. I've been there 13 and a half years. And the conditions are, they want you to do certain things on the job, but they don't sanitize. And through the pandemic, as Christine said, we worked through the pandemic, but no sanitation is being done. And then they want you to come in to work. Even when we have gotten cases for COVID, they still want you to work, even though you've been around people that have COVID. You can go get tested, but that's not the right way to do it. That's definitely not the right way to do it. You want to make sure your workers that are making these cookies for the consumer are protected as well. We don't want to have COVID and working, making cookies, and we're not safe, and they're not making us safe all at the same time.
How many workers are in the plant that you're both in?
Go ahead, Darlene.
436 members at the Richmond plant. It's actually a really good mixture. Probably a little bit more men than women, but for the most part, pretty good mixture. We've got people that have worked there for 45 years. Their children or spouses are working there. It used to be a really nice family affair at this plant until it started changing hands. And once it went over into Kraft and they spun off Mondelez, that's when things started going downhill for the workers in the plant.
Yes.
Now, one of the things I don't understand is this thing with the work hours and how that affects you and what exactly it means. So who wants to tell me about that?
This is Christine. I can speak on it. Right now, we have an 8-hour shift. Anything after 8 hours is either time and a half, and on Sundays is double time. They want to change that to a 12-hour shift with straight time. They saying it's for a better work home balance. It can't be. How can it be better when you're cutting my salary because now I'm working 12 hours with no overtime pay, and on top of that, you're cutting my premium pay. And if it's for a better work-life balance, you're making it worse because if you got children, how are you going to get your children on and off of the school bus or on and off school when you're working 12 hours and it's no guarantee, you're going to go home after that 12 hours. You can get, and they stated, you can get forced up to 60 hours per week. So how is that a better work-life balance when now regularly we work a typically 40 hours a week? Anything over that is chosen. Can choose when we want to work on Saturday and Sunday. That's a choice we make if the lines is running. But the way they want to go to it is no choice. You could be working Saturday and Sunday regardless.
And Janelle and Christine, both of you also talk about daily, what it's like to work. I mean, to get some sense of the kind of the pride that people go to work with and the blood, sweat, and tears that people like yourself have put into the Nabisco plant where you work for decades now.
It used to be a great place to work, as Darlene stated, until Mondelez took over. When it started shifting hands and Mondelez took over, you could see the morale in the plant has just gone down here. People, damn, they don't care. You know, they come to work and they do their job, but they don't care about the quality of the product like it used to be because the management don't care. We go to them and tell them this not looking right. They tell you to run it anyway. When you tell them, no, I can't run this because my family eat this, you're going to run this because I said so. The quality of the product is not the way it used to be because their focus is getting out numbers as opposed to getting out quality product. And case in point, if you get a package of our product, if you can find it, made here in Richmond, and a package from Mexico, you can see the difference. We can tell that those made in Mexico, no, they don't care about it because it's crumbly, it doesn't taste as good. And look at coming from Richmond, we put out a better quality product, but it's not like it used to be.
And tell us what your job is like on a day-to-day basis, the labor, the energy that you put in. What's it like?
I go to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I live an hour and 45 minutes away. I'm happy to get up and go to work, but when Mondelez has taken over, it's like, I hate to get up now, but I know I have a job to do, and I'm going to do that job regardless. But I'm not looking for no pat on the back. It's just that doing your workers some justice, and this the thanks we get. You want to take all our benefits away. You want to pay us low pay. You want to do everything to us but the right thing. I make the ingredients, mix the ingredients up, and I love doing what I do. I rotate different lines every day and make sure the product a standard, the highest standard it could be. Now, I can't speak for everybody else in the plant, but we all try to make sure that that cookie is what the consumer wants.
To piggyback off of what Janella just said, I love my job too. It's just the working conditions. They come in, want to take, but they're not rewarding us for the hard work that we done put in. They got all these signs posted all around the plant talking about heroes work here. But you're not treating us like heroes. You're treating us like stray off the street just coming in because you want to take everything from us. You want to change our work schedule. You want us to pay for insurance that we done paid for over the years by concession, by not getting raises. But yet and still, you're going to put up these banners that's supposed to make us feel better. Heroes work here. We don't feel like heroes. We feel like somebody that you don't care about because if you treat heroes like this, that shows how you're treating everybody else.
Well, let's just back up for a second. You mentioned insurance. Does that mean health insurance? What's happening with health insurance?
Yes. They want to change that also. They want the new people coming in to pay for the insurance, whereas right now we don't pay for it. But technically we have paid for it because over the years we have gave up raises so we could keep the health insurance. So we paid for it, but now they want to backtrack and want us to pay for it again. That's not fair to us and not fair to the young people coming in either, because if they find out, oh, they got to pay for insurance that we don't have to pay for it, that's a way that they want to divide us.
I want to get on board with understanding more about the downsizing. What I understand is nearly 2,000 jobs to Mexico. Tell us about that.
The company actually shut down two plants this year. In June, they shut down their Atlanta, Georgia plant. In July, they shut down their Fairlawn, New Jersey plant. That took about 1,000 workers out of work. That cut our membership as union members 50%. And the company saved $300 million by shutting that plant down. Now, we've asked the company, would they repatriotize that product to Chicago, Portland, and Richmond? And we asked what in writing, and they wouldn't do it. But yet they're telling the public, we didn't send anything overseas. Of course you did. You sent it to Mexico. They are killing the American middle-class jobs. We can't compete with Mexico. They make 97 cents an hour. Did y'all hear what I said, 97 cents? That's ridiculous. That's slave labor. And I get passionate about it because it makes me angry. Not only are they treating the American workers wrong, but they're treating the Mexico workers wrong too. So our campaign right now is not to boycott all the products, but to boycott the Mexican products and start letting our American plants start producing the stuff and keeping the middle-class jobs here instead of shipping everything over there. Our people at the plant have a fear. Are we going to be the next plant that gets shut down? You know, we worked through this major pandemic, and we're still in this pandemic. And the reward that they gave our plants in New Jersey and in Georgia was to shut them down. How horrible. Shame on Nabisco for what they've done. And now we're at these crossroads with our negotiation. They want everything that we've gone to the table with, and I have been personally at these negotiations, has been a takeaway. If you guys excuse my voice, me and the bullhorn out on the picket line, I think the bullhorn won. But everything's a takeaway with the company. All they want is concessions, concessions, concessions. But like Christine was talking about, the alternative work schedule, which is a 12-hour shift, alternate days, but they can force you up to 60 hours a week. By doing that, what they're also doing is taking away our premium pay. So that's going to cost our workers anywhere from $20,000 to $40,000 a year in overtime pay. That's a major takeaway. And with our health insurance, what they want to do is a two-tier system. We have 100% health care, but we pay for this with concessions over the years. We have given up raises in order to have what we have today. So what the company has proposed, any new hires would have to pay for theirs, and we could keep what we had till the end of the new contract. We said no. We're not selling out any new employees. We are a union. We are union strong, and we're family strong. We would never do that. And I'm appalled that the company would even ask us to do something like that. But then again, it's another way of busting our union up. That really pissed me off, to say the least. Back during the pandemic, with our people working as hard as they were working, they came to us in March. They were going to give them our appreciation check for the hours that they worked for the entire year. They came to our people with a $300 check before they took taxes out. And I thought, are you kidding me? They just made $28 billion in revenues, and they gave us $300, took taxes out of that. I took that $300, and I divided it by 52. They valued their workers at $5.77 a week during a pandemic, where they were risking their own lives and risking their family and loved ones' lives. This is what we're dealing with. It gets to the point that you have to say, when is enough enough? You know, they stole our pension. Now they're trying to take everything else away from us. Corporate greed at its finest. And it's right here at Mondelez. And the people have finally came to the point that we're not going to take it anymore. So we're walking that picket line right now, 24/7. The temperatures down here in Richmond have been in the 90s, 98, 97. I mean, it's extremely hot. But we're out there walking. We've been in torrential downpours. These people have not let up. We started this fight on the 16th of August. They are still going strong. And I give them kudos, because if that doesn't tell the world they are fighting for what they believe in, I don't know what else would.
Darlene, describe a little for us your background and relationship. You're a union leader, organizer at this point. Did you come up from the ranks, and how did you begin to take a stand and work in this plant?
Well, I've worked at the plant for 14 years. This June, I was elected as the business agent, financial secretary for the local 358. So I just left that plant in June to take this new role on. So I've been in those trenches I know how I was treated there. I know how my coworkers feel. We came in, day night. You never know if you get to go home because an hour before your shift ends, they could be forcing you over, which they did a lot of. They're working 16-hour shifts. You're tired. You're scared. You don't know if you're going to be the next one to get sick. But the work itself is very physical, demanding work. We're standing on concrete floors. That wears on you. And then the morale in the plant has been horrible. Ever since the company took the pensions, such low morale to the point that you got up in the morning and you were pulling into that parking lot, you felt the tension. I mean, you could cut it with a knife. It was that thick. You just didn't want to be there. No one should have to work like that.
And Janelle and Christine, you're out on the picket lines in this hot weather. What kind of support are you getting from the community?
It's outpouring support, We get donations daily. They come out and help us picket on the lines. I mean, just a whole lot of support, mental support. And they're sometimes they're 24 hours with us supporting us.
Yes, the community has been great. We've even had people come from out of town bringing Gatorade, water, ice, just to say we with you, we support you. The support is great, and yes, it's hot. It is hot. We've been out there, but we make sure we keep something to drink. We keep hydrated. We out there, we fighting for our livelihood, because if we give the company what they want, then they go keep on taking till we have nothing. But the community have really stepped up. People that we thought wouldn't, they've really come through, and they really stepping up for us. So I got to give kudos to the community.
And we're talking about more than 1,000 workers who are on strike at Nabisco's U.S. bakeries and distribution centers. Workers on strike represent Nabisco's only remaining U.S. bakeries in Portland, Oregon, Chicago, Illinois, and Richmond, Virginia. Nabisco workers at the company's distribution centers in Aurora, Colorado, and Norcross, Georgia, are also on strike. Talk to us more about this whole issue of transitioning or the stealing, the theft of jobs, how and when that began to happen and sending them down to Mexico, the change in the company with the new ownership. I mean, talk to us about that process and how infuriating that must be. You know, tell us more about the greed and the profit drive, and how are we to understand this new company that came in when, frankly, Nabisco was doing quite darn well to begin with, profit-wise?
Well, I mean, when they do things, they tell us about it afterwards. They don't outright let us know. It's afterwards. And then we find out about it when they send out a memo, and then you hear about it later. It's been something with this company. Only thing they want to do to us is send our jobs to Mexico. On top of that, these new lines that they bring in, you're not being trained correctly. As far as the transition, there's basically no transition. There's more of a, they're going to do it, and we find out about it later. The workers are always the last to know anything. Always.
But we're the ones putting in all the hard work. And if something goes wrong, they come running to us, want us to tell them how to do this, how to do that. But you're not telling us, oh, look, we getting ready to sell y'all to Mondelez, and we sending X amount of jobs to Mexico. They're not telling us anything. Like Janella said, we are the last ones to know anything, but we putting in the hard work. And the training is awful. And they preach safety. They don't care whether we safe or not. They showed us on that during the pandemic, because if they cared about us, they would have brought in professionally trained cleaners when this COVID first hit to sanitize and clean that whole plant. They did it after the fact. And they still don't have no set protocol as to how they cleaning, what people supposed to do if they found out that they get it or whatever. Yeah, they got a little thing in writing, you do this if you found out you tested. But every time a case come up, then they change what they got in place. How are we supposed to feel like we safe and we care about what we're doing if you're not doing it yourself? Because, see, they don't care. They set up in the front office and behind the desk all day. They don't come out on that packing floor and see how hard we work or what we're going through. During that whole pandemic, we might have seen a supervisor once per day and on payday for them to hand out our paycheck. They didn't come out around us, but then cases popped up in the plant. It wasn't among the supervisors. It was among the workers because they are not sanitizing like they should.
Just to bring up a point, over the last 7 years, Nabisco has closed three of their plants. They downsized some other ones, and they shipped 2,000 good middle-class jobs to Mexico. Right now, they're threatening to ship more jobs to Mexico if we, as a union, don't agree to their demands for their major concessions in this new contract. They're making record profits.
Tell us something about who these CEOs are and their profit rate.
Oh, he's making billions. This guy is Dirk Vanderput. He has just taken, I think he just took a bonus. I don't want to quote the wrong figure, but it was like $13 million from the bonus that he just took. They're not hurting for money, let me tell you. It's just apparently they don't have enough in their pocket as it is. They want to take everything else from us. He works under the European schedules as far as how they treat their people. Americans aren't going to put up with that. Enough is enough. But this guy, I'm not for sure where he lives at. I wish I kind of knew, but I don't. Maybe it's a good thing I don't. But, you know, just the money that this guy is making and the concessions they're asking for, you know, and us asking for them to put a commitment in writing that they're going to keep the jobs here in America and they won't do that. That gives you a real uneasy feeling. What is their game plan? 10 years down the road, are we going to have any American plants producing it? Was everything going overseas for the slave labor?
But I'm also interested in, Ken asked you about the community support. You said the community's really united. I'm interested,
yeah,
though, in two things. What this means for the community to have all these folks out, and whether or not the local politicos, whether your politicians are weighing in on this as well.
Yeah, our politicians have been coming out, giving their support, giving speeches. They've actually donated. We have a GoFundMe fund. They've actually donated to that. They're talking to other politicians. The community, they've been awesome, coming out bringing ice and water. You know, they've walked the lines with us. Our community is a very close-knit community. A lot of us that work in that plant live in this community. If this plant was to go under, that would kill this community. We support the community by going to the grocery stores, and not just the grocery stores. We do all of our local shopping and stuff, and it's hurting the community right now because we don't have the money to be out there supporting them right now because we're not getting a paycheck. So would it devastate the community? I think yes, would. In a whole lot of different ways, you know, the housing industry, everything would fall apart. You'd have people losing their homes, foreclosures. Everything's affected. It's a trickle-down effect.
And do you know this would be the case also in the other plants, too? Because, as we said, we're talking about five cities where Nabisco workers are on strike. So what's the communication there? And is it the same kind of close-knit family of workers and with the same kind of effects in really destroying small communities where these plants are the center fold of the workforce?
Absolutely it is. I've been keeping in touch with Portland. Cameron Taylor is their business agent out there. Their community is behind them 100%. And they're overwhelmed with the support they're getting in a good way. I've talked to Veronica Hopkins up in Chicago. You know, Chicago, they lost 600 jobs to Mexico several years back. Now, this is another hard hit for them. And yes, it is affecting them extremely hard. They're getting a lot of support. I would have to say the solidarity to all three of our plants that are still here in the United States has been overwhelming. It's been awesome. And then the other unions that are stepping up now and coming out to help us. We've had the United Food and Commercial Workers out there. We've had the teacher unions. We've had the Teamsters. We've had the IBUs. We've had CWA, Industrial Workers of the World. I mean, they're all behind us and supporting us. And this is something that I don't think a lot of people realize, but this is a historic thing that's happening right now. This plant has never been on strike here in Richmond. The last strike was 52 years ago in Chicago. We are trying to set a precedent that American workers will not take this anymore. Corporate greed has got to stop.
And so lastly, how do our listeners help you? Boycott Nabisco, and what else? Who do they send letters to? Who do they send messages to? What do they do to help you financially?
If they want to do a financial support, I know that Richmond and Portland both have GoFundMe accounts out there online. So we got those. And then with, I'm not for sure if Chicago has it yet or not, but they can always write a check to their local, which is local number one in Chicago, CCTGM, local number one, to help those guys out. For financial support, that'd be awesome. If they want to start writing letters to our CEO at Mondelez, I encourage that. You know, if you're near anywhere where these strikes are going on, please go out and support these people. After we've been out there 24/7, we're tired. We need that boost. We need to know that people are behind us. That support means a lot to us. So those are different things that they can do to help us. We're not asking them to boycott all the Nabisco products. We're asking them to boycott anything made in Mexico. And it will show it on the label. It'll say made in Mexico, or it will say MM or MS. They have two state-of-the-art plants down there. If they could boycott that, that would be a tremendous help to us.
Darlene Carpenter, Janelle Lambert Watkins, Christine Brown, Nabisco strikers from the Richmond, Virginia plant stay strong and will boycott those Nabisco snacks made in Mexico until you all receive a fair contract. This has been Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.